Shalom Aleichem. For Parshas Chayisara, we have 5 Divrei Torah. Before that, we'll have a quick overview of the Parsha and then get to our Divrei Torah. So we have really 2 main incidents that happen in this week's Parsha. Right after the death of Sarah at the end of last week's Parsha, we have Avraham going to purchase the Ma'arat HaMachpelah in order to bury Sarah there. So we have the quasi-negotiation between Avram and Ephron, the owner of the field. Why do I say quasi-negotiation? Because a typical negotiation, the seller wants to make the most money and states that up front, and the purchaser wants to spend as little as possible and states that up front. And then you have a negotiation between the two, with the seller dropping the price and the purchaser raising the price. That could be a normal negotiation. But in this situation, we have the seller feigning, meaning faking that I would be willing to give you, Avram, the field for free. I don't need any money. And Avram saying, no, I want to pay for the field. Ephron, the seller, was really lying. He was a cheat, and he wanted to make as much money as possible. In the end of the day, he deceitfully set a price, and Avram said, I'm going to pay that price, because Avram didn't want to be negotiating. He wanted the field, and he wanted the Ma'arat HaMachpelah to bury his wife, and Ephron made a lot of money on the deal. So that is number one. Number two, we have Eliezer being sent by Avraham to find the wife from Yitzchak. His instructions are, do not take from the daughters of Canaan where we are living. Go to my homeland. Find from relatives of ours. Go to Besuel. And hopefully he has an appropriate daughter that can be the wife for my son Yitzchak. And there we have the famous story of Eliezer going and saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we could use this as a sign that the woman I say, I have to drink water? And she said, not only am I going to give you, but I'm going to give the camels as well. That is the sign that this is the wife for Yitzchak. And that's what happened with Rivka. And as the Torah tells us, that he gives her the gifts, and then he recounts the story to her father and brother. Her father is Besuel, her brother Lavan, and they agree. They say, this must be from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and accordingly they say, yes, you can take our daughter, that's our daughter, our sister, as a wife for Yitzchak. But then they start to delay, let her tarry here a year, maybe 10 months. And then Eliezer insists, no, she has to come now. I have to fulfill my mission. And they consult with Rivka, and she agrees, I am willing indeed to go with Yitzchak. So at the end of the parsha, we have a couple other issues that go on. Avram remarries to Hagar, and also we have the death of Avram, and thereafterward, the genealogy of Ishmael is spelled out. So we're going to start now with Dvar Torah number 1, all the way at the beginning of the parsha. The pasuk says, Vayuchai Esara. These were the lifetime of Sarah, and it spells out, Mea Shana Ve'esrim Shana Ve'sheva Shanim Shnei Chayei Sarah. Rashi does explain why it says 3 times 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. What do you have to say years on each of those? And there Rashi says something a little bit cryptic. Kulan Shavim Letova, they were all equal in good, as if Sarah had a good life throughout her life. And that doesn't seem to be the truth, because if we look back at the various incidents we've been seeing over the Parshias, we see that there were a lot of difficulties, a lot of challenges that Sarah had to go through, and we can recount a few of them. Number one, she had to wait a long time for children. That is a very sorrowful event. Until a child came, she was quite elderly. That is number one. Number two, she was taken by Avimelech as a quote-unquote wife, thinking that she was Avraham's sister, not his wife. So that was certainly a traumatic event. Number three, if you can think about the hunger that they had when there was a famine in the land and they had to go from place to place, obviously very challenging. And number four, the Akedas Yitzchak. She got the news that the Akeda, Avram, was going to be slaughtering their dear son Yitzchak, and that is what led to fright and death of Sarah. So how can we possibly say, Rashi, Kulam Shavim Latova, that they were all good, when we look at these incidents and sorrows? They didn't seem to be a very easy life, not very easy years that she went through. So that is our question. And the answer is brought by the Korban Ani. He says, it's all about attitude. And because Sarah accepted these issues and challenges and travails and traumas ba'ahava, with love, and she had the attitude of gamzu letova, like the famous Gemara of Nachum Ish Gamzu, that even though he had terrible illness and terrible pains in his life, he would still say, Gamzu Latova, this too is for the good. Anyone who has a positive attitude like that, despite all the challenges, the travails, the sorrows, the difficulties, nonetheless is going to have Kulam Shavim Latova, will have a good life. Because we could have somebody who doesn't have challenges but is bitter, that is not a good life. But we have somebody who does have difficulties and challenges, but takes it in stride, and even more so, be'ahava, and is able to say, Gamzu Latova, this too is for the good. That is a person who's going to have Kulam Shavim Latova, will have a very happy life. So that is why we could say Kulam Shavim Latova, even though there were certainly a lot of challenges going on there. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 2. And this actually comes from a new sefer that I got on a visit to New York now. I met a young man who is learning in Yeshiva University. And when he learned in Yeshiva HaKotel a number of years ago, he got very close with the great Rebbe Avigdor Nevinsol. So Rav Avigdor Nevinsol, the great Rav of the Old City. And young man, his name is Ben Sion Rothenberg. And by English, he goes by Zach Rothenberg. And he would go and ask every Shabbos numerous questions on Parsha to Rav Nevinsol, and he would write them down. He'd ask, for example, 10, 15 questions every week, and then he'd record the best of them, record as he write down in his notebook. And after he filled volumes up with all the questions, he was advised by people, you know, you should really put out a sefer. So I think it was about 4 years ago, he put out the first volume, which is Bereishis and Shmos, which is what I have in front of me. He gave it to me, and I was delighted. I sat down fairly quickly and started learning them and fell in love with the book. And he is now working on finishing up the second volume, which is going to include Vayikra, Bamidvar, and Varim. So he should have much luck in putting out the next volume. I will be first online to purchase it happily. So we are going to start talking about Ephron now. Ephron, the seller of the Maras HaMachpela. So there is a pasuk in Mishle. I will read it and then translate it. So it says as follows, Nibahal Lachon Ishra La'ayin. So somebody who is very eager for money, he is a person who has an evil eye, Ra'ayin. We'll explain what that means. V'lo yeda ki cheser yevu'enu. And I'm going to read again in the English as follows. One over-eager for wealth has an evil eye. He does not know that want may befall him. Somebody who's over-eager, he has an evil eye, he can always be wanting, he can always feel lacking. So there's a medrash in Bereishis Rabba that says as follows, bringing this pasuk, Nifala Hon Ishra Ayin, somebody who is over-eager for money, he has a Ra'ayin. Who is that referring to? That has a stingy, evil eye. That is referring to Ephron. That is referring to Ephron, the seller of the Maras HaMachpelah to Avram. Chihichnis Ayin Ra b'mamono shel tzadik. He put an Ayin Ra, an evil eye, into the mamon, into the money of a tzadik, talking about Avram. He dealt poorly. He dealt in a very nefarious manner with Avraham. He was not upfront, and he really did squeeze a lot of money out of Avraham, making himself look like a tzaddik. I want to give you the field for free, but that was not at all his intention. So Rav Nevinsol points out that Ra'ayin and this pasuk, somebody who has a stingy eye, an evil eye, that is the gematria of Ephron when it's spelled Aleph, Fei Reish Nun without the Vav, that is sometimes how it's spelled, Ephron. That is the same gematria. It's referring to Ephron as somebody who was overeager for money, who had an evil eye, and continuing in the Sefer, Kach Nemar Alav, Mibnei Shalo Haisalo Ayin Tova Liras Et HaTzotzah Mimashu Asa. This is very important. Why does it say that he had an evil eye? He did not have a good eye, meaning somebody who has a good eye is looking at what the consequences of what he does. What are the consequences? What's going to happen because of what I'm doing? You have to think into the future, as we say, Ezu Chacham Ro'eh Tanolad, who is a Chacham, who can see the consequences of the actions that he will take. Ephron had an Ayin Ra'ah. He was not somebody who had a good eye looking at the consequences at what he would do. He faked that he would give the field away for free. Had he really done that, he would have a tremendous chus. He would be recorded in history as the person who gave the field to the Maras HaMachpelah that the Imos and the Avos and Imos were buried in. Tremendous kavod ameis, tremendous mitzvahs. He would be recorded for eternity, and he would have built himself, he would have earned for himself a tremendous chelek in Olam Haba. That is somebody who has an ayin tov, somebody who has a good eye, a positive eye, who can look at the consequences of what he's doing and do the right thing in order to build himself tremendous merits and earn a tremendous place in Olam Haba. He failed. And on the other hand, he failed in a big way. Aval hu lo nahag bechachma. He did not do the intelligent thing. He, in fact, he lost everything just because of money. He wanted to make money. He was overeager for money, as the Pasuk of Mishlei says. And because of that, he had a trade-off. He got money today, but gave away that tremendous schar that he could have earned. And that was his trade-off. And he chose the materialism today for what could have been a tremendous chus for him in the future. Obviously, that is a huge price to pay, and he was short-sighted. So that's why it's talking about Ephron, who is an ayin ra. He has a short-sighted eye, a stingy eye, looking at the materialism today and trading off what could have been in the future. And obviously, that's a huge trade-off. This is a big challenge that he had, and he made the wrong decision. It's not an easy decision to make. But this can apply, as Rav Nevenzahl says, v'se'ech ha'chayim shalanu, this is our lives as well. If somebody wants to earn tremendous schar, you have to work at the schar, and you need to be looking at what is the right decision to make, and we need to look at the trade-offs of our decision. And oftentimes, we are making these decisions. We should be making this analysis. Do we want to spend our time, our money, on efforts on certain things? Do we want to earn a lot more money? Do we want to spend it watching sports? Do we want to spend time wasting time? And that is the decision of Ephron, that's the Ayin Ra, that is making the short-sighted, short-term decision. Or should we, on the other hand, say that is too big a trade-off and there are things that I can be doing instead with this money, there are things that I can be doing instead with my time, but we always have that challenge and we have to make the analysis of the trade. Sometimes it is going to say I have to, obviously, when you have to earn money, you have to have some leisure. Those are going to be positive things and necessary things, but on the other hand, we seem oftentimes to go to the extreme, just like Ephron. Ephron was a very extreme example of the tremendous harsh that he could have had had he given the field for free or even at a discount, but he didn't do that. The trade-off, he made the bad decision. And that's the lesson for all of us, that we shouldn't let these short-sighted, short-term issues get us off track as to what could be so much more significant for us. So that is from Nevenzahl, as recorded in the beautiful Sefer Kimitzion Ala Torah by Ben Sion Rothenberg. Okay, we're now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 3, and we have the instructions. We're going to the second Maisa. That was all based on the field and the sale of the Maras HaMachpelah from Ephron to Avram, and now we're going on to the search for a wife. Eliezer looking for a wife for Yitzchak. And in the instructions that Avram gave to his trusted servant Eliezer, he says, Lo tikach isha livni mibnas ha-Kanani. I don't want you to take a wife from the daughters, from the women of Canaan, the wild daughters of Canaan. That is not the target pool. I want you to go to Besuel. So the question is, why go to Besuel? Besuel also was an Oved of Arazora. Why is that going to be better? Go all the way to Besuel. That's a long trip. And why is that any better if Besuel is the father, and if he has a daughter, which he did have a daughter, but they're over the Avodah Zarah, so how is that going to be helpful? So the Leket Amarim brings as follows, that even though Besuel was also over the Avodah Zarah, but he had something very significant going in his favor that the girls and the people of Canaan did not have in their favor. In Canaan, they were mushchas hamidos, they had terrible midos. Their character traits, their interactions with others, the Ben Adam, the Chaveiro, was terrible. And that is something that is almost impossible, very difficult to change. And he says that it's easier to change somebody's emuna, somebody's hashkafa, somebody's beliefs, even if they're an Oved Avodah Zarah. Not that it's easy to change such a thing, but it's easier to change somebody's beliefs in Avodah Zarah than somebody who lacks good midos, somebody who lacks good midos, that is so intrinsic to the individual, and to change those behaviors that somebody has grown up with is so difficult. It's much more difficult to change midos than the beliefs, even if the beliefs are in Avodah Zarah. And accordingly, he says, Canaan, a daughter of Canaan, a woman from Canaan with bad midos, that is going to be much worse than going to my family, even though my family, Besuel, they may be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idolaters, but they have good midos, and that is so preferred. So that is Dvar Torah number 3, a major, major yesod good midos. We should be growing up with them. We should teach ourselves. We should adjust them. We should teach our kids good midos. It is a lifetime effort to improve midos, but something that is necessary. Now we are moving forward to Dvar Torah number 4, the interesting interchange. Eliezer now recounts the whole story of his meeting Rivka to her father and brother, the father Besua, brother Lavan. And now he's about to recount it, actually, but right before that, they bring out some food to him, as the Pasuk says. They bring out food they want to give him. But he says, before eating, I really need to do my piece. I need to explain something to you, what I'm here for. Now, it's interesting, at the beginning of his discussion, he says, Eved Avraham Anochi. I'm an Eved Avraham. Now, why does he say that? So there's an interesting story that happened with the Chafetz Chaim. There was one time that the Chafetz Chaim was in a city, and he did not publicize who he was. He didn't say, I'm the Chafetz Chaim, when people met him. He didn't say who he was, that he wrote the Chafetz Chaim. But he simply sat in the base medrash, and he learned. He was just there to learn, not making any errors, certainly not making any errors, not even making any public statements about who he was, not introducing himself to people. He was sitting there, he was learning. Now came Shabbos, and one of the Balabatim, one of the men in town, invited him to his house. Can you come over for Shabbos meal? Not knowing who he was inviting. And the Chafetz Chaim responded as follows, Ani Bala Chafetz Chaim. Oh, I want you to know, I am the author of the Chafetz Chaim. So the person was obviously shocked. You have this man sitting here learning, and no one knew who he was, and he didn't tell anyone who he was. And he said, why are you only telling me this now? We didn't know that you were the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim explained, why didn't I tell you who I was? If you look back at our story, when Lavan here in our Pasuk, he gives Eliezer to eat. Vayasam lafan of lachol, he gives him food to eat. The response of Eliezer, this is what the Chafetz Chaim is telling the man who inviting them for Shabbos, the response of Eliezer was, Eved Avram Anochi. He's given food and he says, I'm an Eved, I'm the servant of Ram. Why is he telling this, that? Why is that his response? So his kavan, why Eliezer is really saying is that I'm very careful about kashrus. I'm very about kashrus. I'm not going to eat anything that you give me. I have to be very careful. Maybe I'll eat certain things, but I want you to know, you who is going to supply the food, that you have to make sure that you adhere to my standards, knowing that I am the servant of Eliezer. And the Chafetz Chaim continued, Afani kol hazman ani moneh atzmi mipirsum. Here I am. I was sitting here. There's no reason that I have to publicize who I am. I didn't have to tell people who I am. However, when somebody invites me to a meal, I accordingly have to inform him who I am, so they should know that I have very high standards of kashrus, and to ensure that they will adhere to those standards. So that's why I'm informing you at this point. I don't have to tell people who I am, what I have to publicize who I am, but when there's a reason for it, somebody invites me, I have to inform them who I am to know that I have high standards when it comes to kashrus, and that is learned from what Eliezer said in our Pasuk, when Lavan, they gave him food, and he says, Eved Avram Anochi, I am the servant of Ram. Why did he say that? He's saying, I have to be very careful about what I eat. Moving forward to our final Dvar Torah, number 5, after Eliezer recounts the whole discussion, the whole interchange between him and Rivka, how he said the siman is going to be, if she offers not only me, but she's going to give to the camels as well, that is going to be the person that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me is the proper wife for Yitzchak. And their response after hearing the amazing story of Vayomer, this is the response of Lavan and Mesuel, Me'ashem Yatzah Davar. It is so obvious that this shidduch, this whole occurrence is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course we have to say yes, that Rivka can be taken as a wife for Yitzchak. How would we say no? It's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what is fascinating here is we see that there are times that people are nogea bedavar, that they have a conflict of interest. Initially, they said, absolutely, you can take Rivka, no problem whatsoever. But afterwards, they start hesitating a little bit. They start dilly-dallying. And when they initially said, Me'ashem yatzah davar, take her, absolutely. Don't even delay. Don't tarry. Take her right now. But afterward, they said, let her sit with us. Let her maintain her residence with us for a year, for 10 months. And what we see here, this is what Rav Gershon Mitlin says, is that although people know what's right and initially know what the right thing to do is, but sometimes because they have a conflict of interest, they have their own interest involved, those own interests, their personal interests, can get in the way of doing even what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to do, and they know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to do something. They know HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be the wife for Yitzchak, but then they start analyzing it, and maybe she should stay longer with us. And this conflict of interest, these personal needs, these personal desires, indeed can get in the way of doing the right thing. And so too, so many times we know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, but we rationalize things. And it could be something that looks a great piece of food in front of us. We're at a restaurant and we don't know if the kashrus is good, and we rationalize it. It must be good. It must be okay. There's somebody with a yarmulke eating in there. There's something Brutpeya is eating in there. And we oftentimes rationalize things when it comes to kashrus, or something is okay for Shabbos, or making a late Dominion because I need to sleep later. We're masters at rationalizing things, of course, when there's a conflict of interest, what's going to be better for us, even though we know that it is not the right thing to do. And this is what we learn from here. We see it blatantly. They said right off the bat, Vayomer Hashem Yatzadavar, this is obviously a shidduch from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously don't delay, take her for Yitzchak as a wife. But then thereafterward, when we hesitate, we analyze, our own interests kick in, and that is when we start to rationalize, and that is when we get a little bit off track. So obviously we have to be open and honest with ourselves that we shouldn't let our own interests get in the way of doing the right thing. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.